When was the last time you refreshed your bedding? Sleep cooler with Avocado's naturally breathable, certified organic sheets. Choose from GOTS-certified organic cotton, linen, or hemp, all made-safe certified to the highest standards of non-toxic safety, delivering the ultimate in luxury, sustainability, and style, and a deeper, more restorative sleep. Join Avocado's mission to be one of the world's most sustainable brands at avocadomattress.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. That was one of his most miserable moments. Now, this is the very first line of the section that we're discussing today, and there's a reason for this. Now, it doesn't say that was his most miserable moment, but it was one of them. And we've seen that these continue to pile up. Situations with the trolls, with the goblins in the cave, and now he's alone. As a reminder, he's been following, well, along with the party, in some ways leading the party towards, well, what appears to be a bunch of elves in a forest with a feast. And they're starving. And 3 times now, they've been left in the dark. And this final time, Bilbo is alone, in complete silence and darkness, and neither he nor the dwarves can find each other. Now, this is one of his most miserable moments, and that's important, because this is part of the hero's journey. And we're going to take a deeper look at that in the bonus episode today. But for right now, the details that you need to know about are things like you begin in the ordinary world, or at least the hero does. That's step number 1 of 12. Then the call to adventure, you move, and think of this as like a clock. You're starting at noon and moving around the clock. And of course, you go through these different steps. Eventually you meet a mentor, and eventually you cross the threshold into the special world, this world of the Fae. We are at the step that you could call tests, allies, and enemies. And this is a fairly complex step. In fact, you could even make an argument for the fact that within this step, there are these smaller cycles of descent and then rise. You descend into a difficulty, a struggle, and then rise again, and you make your way out of it. And then you descend into a deeper struggle and then rise and make your way out of that. But each time, you're taking steps further and further into the special world toward what is called the ordeal. This is the rock bottom of, well, this entire thing. This is 6 o'clock on the clock. This is as deep as you get into the special world. And we know Bilbo isn't quite all the way down there yet, because that happens still later in the story, but he's getting close. Every time he descends into one of these tests, he gets deeper and things become more difficult. But descending into these tests proves that he can actually succeed, that he's able, that he's capable. And we are at one of those moments. He is at one of his most miserable moments, it describes here. And this becomes a test for Bilbo. The first time that he's truly alone, the first time that he has to rely on his own abilities, his own strength, his own will, his own willingness to do what he needs to do. And this changes him. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Before we get to all of that, we need to talk about spiders and the sticky situation he finds himself in. So he's at this really deep, dark place, and deep as in like in the forest, but also emotionally, mentally deep. This is a dark moment for him. And in fact, it's so dark that he doesn't know what to do. He has no light. He decides that he's not just going to go wandering around in the darkness. And so he sits down up against a tree and he starts daydreaming about the things that he has lost, the things so far away that used to bring him comfort, his hobbit hole, the beautiful pantries full of food. And this turns to this moment where he loses consciousness, and I don't think he's even aware of it at this time, but he's exhausted, he's hungry, and it doesn't say it in the text, but you get this feeling that he's just about ready to give up until he feels himself being touched by something, some sort of sticky substance, a string wrapped around his hand, and then he realizes he can't move. He's woken up. He gets up and he falls over. And at any other moment in the story, I would have noted this as being one of those comedic moments. But no, I think this is actually supposed to be terrifying. This isn't a funny fall. This is a, oh no, he's trapped. He's bound. He fell asleep. And immediately we're told in the next paragraph, then the great spider who had been busy tying him up while he dozed came from behind him and came at him. And we get these descriptions about the eyes and the hairy legs. He could feel the hairy legs and he struggled against a spider that is large enough to tie him up, to bound him like a villain in a cartoon to a railroad track, but not really a railroad track. But this is something I think about, too, on occasion. I think we've been desensitized to some of these things over the years. This idea of a big spider as an enemy shows up in movies and video games all the time. And you have these large spiders. Now, in this case, the spiders are not specifically described, but you get the sense that they're fairly big. And by fairly big, I mean somewhere in the range of a dog, or maybe even as big as Bilbo, or bigger. Now, think about spiders in our own world. If you come across a spider that is the size of a penny, you think twice about getting near it. If it's inside your house, maybe you're a nice person, you catch it in a cup or a paper towel or something and take it outside. If you're not so nice, maybe you just squash it right there. Now, if you come across a spider that's the size of, say, a quarter, then you think twice. One the size of your hand? You totally nope out of that. And those exist. Here in Florida, I used to work at a summer camp when I was in college. And we had, I think they were called banana spiders. I don't remember. But they were as big as your hands. And they would hang from the trees in the mornings. And you'd get up early in the morning at the camp. And there'd be mist. And it was very beautiful. But hanging in the mist were all these webs that these gigantic spiders would make with the dew hanging off of them. And these hand-sized spiders with these angular legs would just hang out on the trees above us. And they weren't dangerous. They wouldn't attack us. But they were definitely creepy. And I wasn't going to go anywhere near them. Now imagine a spider the size of a dog or a hobbit. That is absolutely terrifying. you would not go anywhere near that thing. And think about how quickly it could probably move. Touching it would be at the end of your list of priorities, for sure. And here Bilbo is, struggling against one of them. He can feel its hairy legs. He is about to become dinner for this thing. But then we get this line right here. It was lucky that he had come to his senses in time. And remember, I've pointed this out before, how lucky Bilbo seems to be. Time and time again, lucky. Was it luck that awoke him just in time to deal with this spider? Or was it something else? Was it a hand of fate? Was it Ilúvatar himself reaching into the world and just giving him a little nudge? Hey there, maybe you should wake up. And this happened just in time. He beats the creature with his hands and, of course, is trying to poison him. We get this analogy here, like spiders do to flies, spiders and flies. And then he remembers his sword. Now, notice, this isn't the first thing he goes to. He's by no means a trained warrior. But he remembers. He has something for the situation. And he draws it out. And immediately, notice that the spider jumps back. Not because he's already swung it. Not because he's already used it against the spider. But because the spider recognizes what it means. Now, this might seem contrary to the line that comes after this. The spider evidently was not used to things that carried such stings at their sides, or it would have hurried away quicker. But you have to pay attention to the words here. Remember, this is J.R.R. Tolkien. Not being used to things that carry stings at their sides and being completely foreign to the idea are two different things. These spiders don't usually have difficulty eating and capturing their prey. They're probably doing things like attacking the deer that we've seen in the woods previously. And maybe the elves, but it appears that the two groups, or at least this individual spider, doesn't seem to tussle with elves very often because they would definitely carry things that could sting the spider back. And so Bilbo uses this to his advantage. The spider has moved back a little bit, and Bilbo rushes forwards and uses it to stab the eyes of the spider. And like any insect that you've ever dealt with before, when they're injured, they start to glitch out, would be a more modern phrase for this. They start to move and wiggle in this terrible way, like they're in pain or their body no longer functions correctly. And this spider does the same thing until Bilbo stabs it again and kills it. And at that moment, he falls down and he remembers nothing for a long while. And this isn't because he's been injured. He could have been poisoned and completely bound. But no, remember, he's exhausted. And this was a very, very exhausting way to be woken from your sleep. It's also still very, very dark. By the time he wakes up, there's a little bit of light back in the forest. Remember, we're at the part of the forest where the light still is dark, but, or at least the lack of light is dark, but it still seems to be enough to see at least a little ways out ahead of yourself. And he notices that the sword blade is stained black. Another reference to black. These black spiders, the black blood of the spiders. None of this feels natural or normal. But after waking back up, and you could argue that this is a small resurrection, this idea of descending into sleep. Sometimes people describe sleep as the little death. But he wakes back up, and this time he's not panicked. He's not bound. He's not even concerned as much as he was before with what was going on. Somehow killing the giant spider all alone by himself in the dark without the help of the wizard or the dwarves or of anyone else made a great difference to Mr. Baggins. Not Bilbo, Mr. Baggins, a more formal kind of name, a more grown-up kind of name. He felt like he was a different person. It says here, much fiercer and bolder, in spite of an empty stomach. He was a different person. He descended into the ordeal in kind of a minor way, and he comes back different. He decides that he's going to give the sword a name and calls it Sting. Remember, The spider was not familiar with things that hold stings at their sides. And what better way to deal with a spider than to sting it back? That feels like a term you would use for bugs or insects. And he's motivated here. He decides now's the time to go look for his friends, but he doesn't know where they are. And he wonders if maybe they were made prisoners by the elves. We get this foreshadowing here. Or worse things. So he sets off, trying to figure out the best way he could have gone in whatever direction he seemed to remember was the best way. And of course, he's lucky again. And we get a little reminder before he finds the dwarves that he's still the same person fundamentally. He laments the idea that, oh, they should have followed Bjorn's and Gandalf's advice. What a mess they're in. I wish it was we. It's horrible being alone. But in spite of all of that, he is motivated to act. And then we're told this, and by luck, he was born with a good share of it. He guessed more or less right about the direction that they were in. Again, a reference to luck, and it seems here that the narrator has realized that at this point, we've mentioned luck multiple times, he was born with a good share of it. It was something he was born with. It's a natural feature of some individuals. Or is it something else? And he decides that he's going to creep along. And we're reminded here that hobbits are clever at quietness, especially in woods. And this is a little detail that keeps coming up on occasion throughout these books. And I believe that this detail was born of a justification to Tolkien's audience and maybe even his children about why you don't come across hobbits in the world anymore. At least this was the initial justification. Later on, Tolkien went on to describe that hobbits were a human race, and eventually they mixed with the population, and so you don't find hobbits as an individual group anymore in the world. And that was from the perspective of this being part of the history of our own world, that sort of thing. But early on, there was more of a fairy tale justification for these things. If hobbits still exist in the world, the reason why we can't see them is because they're very good at being quiet, especially in the woods, where you might come across fairy-like creatures. And you can kind of see the evolution of this in the story still. Now, Bilbo has something else with him that makes him even better at, well, hiding. And of course, it's the ring. And we're going to get to some other questions about the ring in a moment. But before that, we get this description about what he notices ahead of him, this dense black shadow. And it was black even for that forest. Again, this black and this darkness, almost to the point where the blackness is like a black hole. It's as if it's a place where light disappears completely. And it's described as a patch of midnight that had never been cleared away. We get descriptions of these webs tangled over each other and spiders, huge spiders, sitting on branches above him, which must have been terrifying to look up and notice. Bilbo here is descending into a type of hell, a place where light disappears, where everywhere he looks, there is danger and horrific things that can kill him, tangle him up. Now, one of the rumors about why spiders show up so often in Tolkien's work is because as a young man or a younger adult, at some point in his earlier life, he was bitten by a tarantula. And that may not have very much actual evidence or proof around the idea. Another rumor that may have a little bit more proof is the idea that his children found spiders to be particularly scary or unnerving, and so that made sense for him to work them into a story as a specific type of villain or bad guy or monster in order to make the stories more engaging for his children because they would have been a bit freaked out by these gigantic spider creatures. Whatever the justification, it seems to work because these things are terrifying, and Bilbo is descending into their nest willingly. And when he does this, he realizes something. They're talking to each other. He could make out many of the words that they said, and they were talking about the dwarves. You know, it's hard to pick what I like the most about Rosetta Stone. I mean, first of all, they make learning another language so much easier, and all of us can become a lot closer to J.R.R. Tolkien in that sense, and yet he didn't have access to Rosetta Stone, but that gives us an upper hand. We can learn faster, we can retain the information longer, we can improve our pronunciation without having to be in a room full of native speakers. We can learn anytime and anywhere, and all of that is what makes this incredible. But beyond all that, there's even better news. 50% off lifetime membership right now. That's what you can get. That's 25 languages. That's a mobile app, a desktop app. You can use it anywhere you want. It's kind of incredible when you think about it. Lifetime membership, 25 languages you could learn for the rest of your life. So don't wait. Unlock your learning potential right now. Lord of the Rings Lorecast listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
And there's debate about why this is. One of the reasons for this could be that, well, it's a fairy tale. Oftentimes creatures, even non-human creatures, can speak in fairy tales. We've already seen the wargs speak. Obviously, goblins and trolls can speak, and they speak in languages that can be understood. At least the goblins and the trolls, the wargs had their own language, and Gandalf could understand it. But here, Bilbo is also wearing the ring. And you have to remember, when this was originally written, there was no Lord of the Rings trilogy after this. The ring itself was a magical ring. There was no connection to Sauron and this turning into something even more dark and terrible, or having powers beyond the ability to simply turn Bilbo invisible. And yet, that could be a justification. He's wearing an actual magical device bound to the darkness, and these are creatures of darkness, so maybe that makes it possible for him to understand them. Whatever the justification, he can understand them. We get this conversation, too. I'll read through it, and we're going to notice some of the details here. "It was a sharp struggle, but worth it," said one. "What nasty thick skins they have, to be sure. But I'll wager there is good juice inside." "Aye, they'll make fine eating when they've hung a bit," said another. "Don't hang them too long," said a third. "They're not as fat as they might be. Been feeding none too well of late, I should guess." "Kill him, I say," hissed a fourth. "Kill him now and hang him dead for a while." "They're dead now, I'll warrant," said the first. "That they are not. I saw one a-struggling just now, just coming round again, I should say, after a beautiful sleep. I'll show you." Does this remind you of something? Remember the trolls debating about how to eat the dwarves? We have another situation. Every time that they come into trouble in this story so far, they've had to deal with creatures debating how to kill and eat them. There's something distinctly terrifying about death by being eaten. And the spiders are no different, and yet they debate with each other. This is something that is very common among the enemies. These groups of villains that seem intelligent are able to debate with each other. And they argue a lot. Each of these groups argues with each other all the time. This seems to be a common theme among the types of people. And let's put this out here. Spiders, in this case, are people. Orcs, goblins, trolls are types of people. The types of people who do evil things, have evil thoughts, are more likely to argue with each other. That seems like a theme in Tolkien's work. And if you think about it in your own life, when you've been around good people, they tend to be less argumentative. They tend to be more open to each other's ideas, or at least more polite in the way that they debate those ideas. But when you're around people who are not the best people to be around, they're more harsh, they're more difficult with each other. They say things that are more abrasive and forceful. And I think maybe Tolkien's onto something here. And there's another aspect to their personalities that is pointed out here. Bilbo comes across the dwarves. There's a foot sticking out. There's a big one that looks like Bomber, probably. And he kicks one of the spiders. And of course, they laugh at him. "You're quite right," they said. "That meat's alive and kicking. I'll soon put an end to it," hissed the angry spider, climbing back onto the branch. Notice here that one of them laughs at the pain of the other. This is another theme of the kinds of people who tend to be more evil. They see the pain and suffering of others and they enjoy it. This is another theme throughout this work, whether it's spiders or goblins or trolls. So Bilbo decides to do something. He finds some stones and he finds one that fits right in the palm of his hand. And we're given these details about Bilbo here that we otherwise wouldn't have known. And these are details that actually play out with other hobbits in later stories, but it says here, as a boy, he used to practice with an S, not a C, throwing stones at things until rabbits and squirrels and even birds got out of his way as quick as lightning if they saw him stoop. And even grown up, he had still spent a deal of his time at Quoits, Q-U-O-I-T-S, which I had to look up. I'll get to that in a minute. Dart throwing, shooting at the wand, bowls, ninepins, and other quiet games of the aiming and throwing sort. Now, these are not all familiar to us, or at least to me, and probably many of you. So, quoits is a traditional game played by throwing rings at a peg or stake, aiming to encircle it or get as close as possible. Oftentimes, these are laid out in like an X or a cross shape with maybe five pegs, one at the center and four in each cardinal direction. So kind of like a ring tossed type of game. Now, there's other games as well that are noted here. Shooting at the wand, which is a game that consists of using a narrow slat as a target for archery. So he's done archery before. Bowls and ninepins, those are like bowling, or ninepins was an early form of bowling that we now do 10-pin bowling most of the time. But ninepin bowling is kind of similar. I've done this before, actually. The balls are smaller, the pins are a little bit further apart and shaped kind of like in a diamond shape. So these are games that you might be familiar with, and Bilbo has done a lot of this because, of course, he comes from this leisurely cast of society who gets to play games instead of work in the gardens and farming and those kinds of things all the time. And because of this, he's actually pretty good at throwing stuff. Now, we're reminded here that besides blowing smoke rings, asking riddles, and cooking, which are other things that we've learned that he's actually good at, this is one of them. And then we get this. At that moment, Bilbo threw. The stone struck the spider plunk on the head. I like that description. Plunk on the head. And it dropped senseless off the tree, flopped to the ground with all of its legs curled up. That was quite the impact with a stone the size of his palm. And he continues to do this. He takes out another one by breaking the web. It falls and it dies. And he gets their attention. They start following him. And he comes up with this idea that he's going to lead them away. We get this little line. Then danced among the trees, he began to sing a song to infuriate them and bring them all after him, and also to let the dwarves hear his voice. It's smart. He wants them to know that he's there and he's trying to save them. He also wants to make sure that the spiders follow him, even though they can't see him. They have a sense of where these rocks are being thrown from. And then we get the songs that he sings. And of course, these are a delight. Old fat spider spinning in a tree. Old fat spider can't see me. Addercop, addercop, won't you stop? Stop your spinning and look for me. Old Tom Noddy, all big body. Old Tom Noddy can't spy me. Addercop, addercop, down you drop. You'll never catch me up your tree. And of course, if you're like me, you're wondering, what, Tom Noddy? Addercop? What do these mean? Well, addercop is an archaic British English word primarily associated with spiders. It literally translates to poison head, and it reflects the historical belief that spiders, all spiders were poisonous. Of course, not all of them are. In addition to meaning spider, addercop also figuratively describes a malicious, ill-natured, or peevish person. Notice the way that they've been talking. Ill-natured, peevish person. That's how they're acting. So it works for both. He's making fun of the spiders and also saying that they're terrible people at the same time. Now, Tom Noddy, can mean two different things. A puffin, particular to the Atlantic, so the Atlantic puffin, or a foolish or stupid person, also called a noddy. It's a word of Northern English and Scottish regional dialect, often used to describe someone who is slow-witted or easily fooled. Now, you might think that, of course, Tolkien was a master of language and he's pulling this stuff together from different sources, but I have a sense here that in his time and in his place where he was from, these would have been not too uncommon phrases. Most people would have recognized at least the general meaning of these. And the spiders recognized these phrases as well. They didn't like being called Adderkop and Tom Noddy. And they come at him faster than he expects them to. And so, of course, he dodges them and eventually taunts them again. Lazy Lob and Crazy Cob are weaving webs to wind me. I am far more sweet than other meat, but still they cannot find me. Here am I, naughty little fly, you are fat and lazy. You cannot trap me, though you try, in your cobwebs crazy. And the narrator notes here that these aren't necessarily the best poems ever written, which feels like Tolkien responding to critics of his poetry who have said things like he's not necessarily a great poet. But there are some interesting details here. Lazy Lob and Crazy Cob. Lob comes from lop in Old English, L-O-P-P-E, and in Middle English it was lop or lop, just L-O-P, or maybe sometimes two P's, or eventually lob, it changes. And cob is kind of like cob for cobweb. These things mean spider. She-lob, she-lob, she-spider, right? Cob, cobweb, a spider web. These are all related. But on top of that, he's taunting them and saying that he's sweeter than other meat. Like, hey, I'm delicious. You should come try to eat me. And even refers to himself as a naughty little fly. He's doing a very good job taunting spiders in a way that would make sense for spiders. And he's absolutely playing with, well, fire. Well, spiders here, but fire for the analogy. And he almost backs himself into this corner. Remember, they're shooting spider webs all over the place. They're trying to catch him, but they can't quite see him. And they get him into this one little corner. The last opening in the trees gets blocked off, and he pulls out his sword and slashes the threads to pieces and went off singing, continually singing. This is a confident form of Bilbo that we haven't really seen before. And we get this other description about the spiders not necessarily knowing what's going on with the sword. They can see the sword, but they can't see him, which is interesting because you would assume that wielding the ring would make anything that you have on you invisible as well. I mean, your clothing, your pouches, whatever you're carrying is invisible, except maybe not the sword, but maybe the sword is glowing and that's why they can see it, because they can see the light coming from it. Not really sure about that. Interesting question. But we also get this description. He cuts through these webs, and the spiders are upset. Hairy legs waving, nippers and spinners snapping, eyes popping, full of froth and rage. We're reminded about how terrifying these spiders are. But Bilbo has a plan. They follow him into the forest until Bilbo had gone as far as he dared. Then, quieter than a mouse, he stole back. So I hope you enjoyed that episode. We'll be going further into the hero's journey in the bonus episode. I look forward to kind of going over some of the details in that. It is something that you see across all sorts of stories, and it is absolutely something that you should know about, because once you see these patterns, you're going to see in everything. All the way back to, I mean, the Odyssey is a hero's journey. This is in old idea that just keeps getting replicated over and over again. So we'll go into more of that in the bonus episode. So if you'd like to join us on the Patreon, you can get access to those. Patreon.com/LOTR Lorecast, Lord of the Rings Lorecast. And I have to welcome some new members, Nolan and Courtney. Welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you decided to join us. And to everyone else, to all 191 of our current signed up paying patrons, thank you so much for your support. And also to all of our free patrons, thanks for being here. You can sign up for free to make sure that you are plugged in. you know what's going on. And you could also sign up as a VIP patron, like all of these individuals whose names I'm going to not mess up at all, who gets shout outs every week. AK Music Lover, Aldarin Was Right, Apollo, Azzle Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Cali Cat, Captain Legolas Turner, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, George B, Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, Huon Is My Hero, Jezzer, Katie S, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Matt, Nick K, Nolan, Party Snacks, Richard J, Rivqua, Rosie Rose, The Bestest Boy TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor. There you go. That's everybody. Thank you so much for your support. Well, it's all of our VIP patrons. Also, got two new reviews that came in on Apple Podcasts. Reminder, if you leave a 5-star review on Apple, I'll read it out as long as I can see it. I can see the ones in the US, but please feel free to leave that on whatever platform you listen to this on. That absolutely helps a ton. This one comes from Party Snacks. Hello again, Party Snacks. Wonderful. 5 stars. Discovered this podcast while trying to find more info on the world of Arda. 2 weeks and 40 episodes later, I'm hooked. Tom is an amazing narrator, and I can't wait to learn more, except for when I stumble over my words. Thank you so much, Party Snacks. And then this one from Minutetime15, who writes, Hello, Mr. Robot Man. Hello, Minutetime15. I just got to the second age. Where are the dwarves? The dwarves did show up in the first age. They did some things with the elves, if you remember. They're from the Blue Mountains. There's some dwarves, but yeah, most of the dwarf stuff doesn't really show up until the Lord of the Rings, where we get a lot more dwarf references, and of course the Hobbit, the dwarves in the Hobbit. Also, hi future me when you listen to this. So hello to future you. Thank you to everybody for your support. Thank you for continuing to be here and making this possible. You are all wonderful, even if you're just listening and hanging out and just enjoying the free episodes. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate you. All right, I'm gonna go record the Hero's Journey bonus episode, and you have a wonderful rest of your week. I will see you next time, and until then, stay safe out there. And if you do find some anthropomorphized spiders who you can understand, then use some of the language that you learned from The Hobbit to tease them into going in the wrong direction so you can save your dwarf friends. Because we all have dwarf friends, right? I mean, you and I, we all exist in a fantasy world. We have elf friends, dwarf friends, hobbit friends. Or at least we wish we did. Wouldn't that be cool? All right, I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.